But what we're determined to do is once a drug has passed its patented life and is clearly in the public domain, that formula is owned by society, and our goal is to make sure that those drugs are within reach of regular people. What we also don't want to do is drive competition out of the market. And what I've been maybe the most happy about is that every market the Civic has entered, we've added competition, not eliminated it. And so we want players to stay in the market. What we're trying to focus on is a price that's sustainable for the manufacturers to still stay, but yet affordable as possible for people.
Welcome to A&M Healthcare Industry Group's What's Your Moonshot podcast series, where world-class healthcare leaders seek to solve big problems. Listen as we talk to today's health system CEOs about the journey to achieve their moonshots.
Welcome to A&M's What's Your Moonshot podcast. I'm Larry Kaiser, Managing Director in Alvarez & Marsal's Healthcare Industry Group. I'm joined by my co-host, the ninth Secretary of the Veterans Administration, the Honorable Secretary, Dr. David Shulkin. David, we're incredibly fortunate today to welcome to the podcast Dan Lilienquist. As a member of the Intermountain Enterprise leadership team, Dan is responsible for setting and achieving Intermountain's strategic priorities, as well as overseeing strategy, corporate development, government relations, and the care transformation and information systems teams. Prior to joining Intermountain, Dan served in the Utah State Senate and was nationally recognized for his work on Medicaid and public sector pension reforms. In 2021, Dan was recognized by Modern Healthcare as one of the 100 most influential people in healthcare and as one of the top 25 innovators in healthcare. He also was featured by Modern Healthcare in The Collaborative, 45 healthcare leaders who exemplify collaboration created in service to the patient. Dan, we're looking forward to speaking with you on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thanks, Larry. Good to be with you both.
Great. Dan, I want to offer my gratitude for you being here and think that our guests are really going to enjoy hearing from you because you are one of these guys that has big ideas, but not only talks about them, actually gets them done. And that's really rare in healthcare. So I think that you have some thoughts about how healthcare should change in terms of value-based care and what healthcare organizations should bring to their communities. But I wanted to get first a little bit of your view of not-for-profit healthcare systems like Intermountain and how they can interact with for-profit healthcare systems. And you've sort of come up with this hybrid model that I want people to understand, how you can form a new entity that's really part not-for-profit and part for-profit. So before we talk to you about some specific initiatives like Civica, can you just tell us your thought process that led you to create this new structure that I think is pretty innovative?
Well, David, yeah, look, it's interesting when you really break down what's happening in healthcare and try to see things from a patient perspective. Regardless of where a patient receives care, they deserve to receive excellent care. So, you know, whether you're an investor-owned hospital or you're not a for-profit health system, a lot of the challenges we're facing are really systemic challenges that are impacting patients across the board. And we fiercely compete with both for-profit and non-profit health systems at Intermountain, which you would expect us to do. We do things better than most, but at the same time, there are core underlying infrastructure and really systems we all rely on to make sure we keep patients safe. And what we found is that we were not large enough to solve problems on our own. We didn't have the scale, and you needed to collaborate with people. And what we've done is created a construct of creating a healthcare utility in a nonprofit structure that brings together all the parties involved in delivering healthcare, whether you're an investor-owned or for-profit or nonprofit, to really focus on solving systemic problems. And what we realized is there was a collective action issue, and oftentimes that collective action issue led to poor results for patients. And I think taking a new lens to the problem, that there are things we could collaborate on and really disruptively collaborate in benefit of the patient, we needed to get past kind of really the artificial constraints of how our individual organizations were structured. And this nonprofit healthcare utility model we developed has been powerful. And I frankly think we're just at the beginning of exploring what this model might do in other sectors of the healthcare system.
So, Dan, in this healthcare utility model, you're identifying needs that the market has, and you're doing it collectively with other health systems. Why is it that the free market can't address those problems the way that you can? Why isn't this the American system where the market would fill these needs?
Look, I'm a free market guy. I'm an economist at heart. And there are certain markets, when markets work well, they're really good for people. Prices are lower, you know, quality is better. But there are certain types of businesses that really lend themselves to what are called natural monopolies. And typically, they're businesses that require massive scale and they're needed, right? There's no close substitutes for what they do. And then finally, in most instances, you may only need one of these situations. So think about a power company. You only have one power company in your neighborhood because you only need one, but it requires massive scale. And frankly, everybody needs power. The challenge is that a business that's not well regulated in that environment could exploit and tax an entire society. And so, you know, traditionally we've regulated those industries. But with respect to healthcare, it's really, really tricky because the complexity involved in what we do doesn't lend itself well to government regulation. And even if government were inclined, it's not particularly effective at doing that. But what we realized, look, the opposite of a monopoly is a monopsony. It's a purchasing monopoly, and those can be dangerous as well. But the idea we had was if we were able to organize the demand side of the equation, organize health systems who are trying to care for patients every day, we might be able to create a new type of utility that was governed in a different way. And David, simply, capital in regular markets flows to find a natural monopoly, not to repair them. The money flowing into the generic drug space was to create your own EpiPen so that you could charge as much money and make as much money as possible. And we realized that there was a gap in the way capital was flowing to repair these issues. Certainly government wasn't particularly well equipped to address these types of issues, but the health systems themselves who were dealing with the downstream negative effects for their patients were in a position to do that. So we believe this is a market-focused solution. We're not reliant on government to do this. We are essentially organizing new markets with a different focus and hopefully a different outcome on ultimately the patients we're trying to serve.
Dan, you mentioned something about scale and size. And at one point, at least, you felt that it was felt that Intermountain was not quite at the size. You did the acquisition of the SCL Healthcare Group. Is Intermountain finished or are you still potentially looking at other targets to continue the reach of Intermountain?
So Larry, Intermountain's mission is to help people live the healthiest lives possible. And that's a really unique mission in healthcare. I mean, what we're saying by that mission is that our intention is to take full clinical and financial accountability for the health of people, work to keep them well, to have a longitudinal relationship with them throughout their lives. And when they need our care, be safe and effective, but also to engage with them effectively so they can live their best lives. What we're realizing is to do that, you have to do that with scale. And you've got to make sure that you have mechanisms to effectively engage, not just individuals, but communities. And so when we think about growth, it's about creating capability sets that allow us to fulfill our mission. And we are focused on the 8-state Intermountain region. We are in 7 states, and we're working on building ecosystems that help keep people well. We are not in the game of trying to change everything everywhere, but we do want to make sure that we prove this model out so that other systems can adopt it and grow. And the simple fact is these communities in the Intermountain West are contiguous. They're flowing to and from each other. And so our focus is there. There may be a few other deals down the road for us, but we're really working to build capabilities everywhere we are. So you'll see additional deal activity from us. But when you think about healthcare in general, healthcare is a lot of it's local. It's really difficult to deliver healthcare for people in Cleveland from Salt Lake City, Utah, you know, especially if you're doing surgeries, et cetera. So there are natural boundaries to where we will go. But our goal is really, how do we create a set of capabilities that allow us to move to a different model? That's worth, frankly, for me, worth investing my productive life to try to get to a better structural delivery system that, again, isn't just catching people when they're sick, but helping them really live their fullest and best lives throughout their journey.
But as part of that mission of yours, you've got it all covered. I mean, you've got an insurance company, you manage the premium dollar, you're managing care, and you, in fact, are co-founder and board chair of Civica Rx and Civica Script. You've helped more than 40 million patients in over 1,550 hospitals receive more affordable care through these organizations. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Civica. Tell us how that perhaps competes with what Mark Cuban is doing. Both of you are in the generic space. Tell me how you're dealing with pharmacy benefit managers, or if you are, tell us a little bit about some of that part of the holistic mission, if you will.
Yeah, so Civica Rx came out of an idea that I had back in 2016. Honestly, was really bothered. I'm a free market guy, as I mentioned, and it really bothered me that drugs that had been past their patented life and should be in the public domain were being cornered by companies. The prices were raised to exorbitant levels, and frankly, really damaging patients, not only economically, but people delaying care. And so as I thought about that challenge, I thought, you know, what's actually happening? And that's where this realization that, again, in certain markets where there's inelastic demand for a product, if you need insulin and you have diabetes, you die if you don't get it. Huge economies of scale, which I understood in drug manufacturing, it takes you years and millions of dollars to set up a company to make drugs. And then each dose costs dollars to make, not millions of dollars to make. But the real realization for me was that in certain markets, there are one or two manufacturers that can meet the entire market demand. The market couldn't have five competitors because they'd have five times the market capacity. And you guys know what that would be like if you had five times the hospital capacity in a market. That would be bad for the market. And so the realization that the reason why these exploitive arrangements were allowed is there was no really reason for another competitor to come in because the market was too small or it just didn't make sense. So the option sets were to try to regulate this. And I didn't think Congress was particularly interested in regulating drug prices directly. And even if they could, they wouldn't be very good at it. So I just started kicking around the idea of, okay, well, what would be required to bring competitive pressure and forces back into the market? And you don't need five competitors, you need two, with one of them being an honest, public-minded healthcare utility. And that was where the insight came, is we could organize a nonprofit generic drug company, work with health systems to found it. Nobody would own it, but the goal would be to intervene in markets where there was abuse of price. And oftentimes that price abuse was allowed because of artificial shortages, that you find out just how desperate people are for a medication when it's short. David, I remember talking to you early on about this as we were forming the company and many others, and it turned out to be a pretty popular idea. And what I've enjoyed about this is that because we've existed, we've been able to interface with government in new ways and really actually help improve the market, but not in a traditional sense with our handout to government for money or really for permission to exist. We decided we were going to do this and intervene directly. And so far, it's helped stabilize the market, and we're just getting started.
Well, what really became impressive is the number of health systems that joined in with you as well. So the idea was very well received. I did ask about, what are you doing different than what Mark Cuban is doing? Or is there any difference for that matter?
You know, we've been cheering on Mark Cuban all along. I mean, this is a target-rich environment. I would think Mark has been focused with the Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug Company really on addressing broader retail market. And Civica's focused on hospital systems first, okay, with primarily sterile injectables, which we couldn't get basic antibiotics or analgesics for patients in hospitals. But I do think there's a nice synergy. We are actually a manufacturing company. Mark Cuban's Cosmos Drug Company is primarily a transparent retail outlet. And so as we move into outpatient drugs like insulin, they're going to be a really great partner for us. And again, I don't own a penny of stock in Civica. I never will. Nobody will. So for us, anybody who's coming to help alleviate suffering and try to make a difference in this convoluted, opaque, exploited market, we're cheering them on. And so it's going to take more than Civica to fix these problems. And we're just a little bit different. We are actually a manufacturer, and we will work with any retail partner who will abide by our pricing philosophy. And that is, we intend to print on our packaging when we start insulin, for example, what we think a fair retail price should be. And oftentimes those retailers are buying drugs for cheap and marking them up thousands of percent, and the patients just don't know any different.
Yeah. Dan, you've mentioned insulin a number of times, and so I think it's a good example of some of the things you've talked about. Now, in the Inflation Reduction Act, that now is law, as you know, they specifically called out on pricing of insulin, and they set a cap for patient expenditures, I think, at $35. So does, now the government is entering into the price negotiation and price setting for certain drugs like insulin, does that make your effort in insulin less relevant, or do you think you're doing something different than what Congress intended to do?
We're supportive for any efforts that try to make drugs more affordable. What Congress did only really applies to Medicare, and it's capping insulin prices at $35 a month. That is actually very helpful to our effort, because what that's doing is it's taking the rebate game that has been afflicting Medicare Advantage and really putting that back on payers. So we've actually had really good, more engagement with payers on finding more affordable insulin with the government's moves around capping Medicare prices at $35 a month. The simple fact is that these don't cost $35 a month. They cost way more than that. It's just the shifting of costs is going back to the payer and ultimately to the government. And so what we're trying to focus on is how do we get to the lowest sustainable manufacturing price and then make sure that we're passing as much of that as possible to the end patient, whether or the payer, whether it's the government or the individual who's paying cash, or frankly, an employer who's providing insurance for their people and can't afford exorbitant insulin prices. So we feel this is a complementary strategy to what we're doing. It certainly didn't derail us. And if anything, what it's done is it's starting to unstitch a lot of this kickback and rebate behavior that happens on the back end, oftentimes through the payers themselves. So we see this as complementary. It's not held us up at all. As you know, David, as a sitting on the Civic Advisory Committee, we've raised the vast majority of the funds for Civic Insulin from philanthropy, and you know, we're almost there. So we expect our first insulin to come to market in 2024.
Have you gotten big enough that Big Pharma has taken some shots at you yet, or under the radar screen?
Look, in the markets, what we've said to pharma is, look, we're not in the innovator space. We're not developing new drugs. We want innovative pharmaceutical development to continue. But what we're determined to do is once a drug has passed its patented life and it's clearly in the public domain, that formula is owned by society, and our goal is to make sure that those drugs are within reach of regular people. What we also don't want to do is drive competition out of the market. And what I've been maybe the most happy about is that every market the Civic has entered, we've added competition, not eliminated it. And so we want players to stay in the market. What we're trying to focus on is a price that's sustainable for the manufacturers to still stay, but yet affordable as possible for people. So what I've been pleased with is the vast majority of the work we've done has been actually in partnership with pharmaceutical companies who left the market and wanted to come back. And that's why we've been able to move so fast. We are also not trying to get into markets where the market is functioning really well. We will only intervene where it's functioning poorly. And so in many ways, that has made it a little bit easier. We're not going after the big profit pools of the innovators. Frankly, we're not an innovator company, but we are making sure that, that again, when a market is performing poorly, we're intervening. And by and large, Big Pharma has been very, I guess, complimentary in the sense that they don't like that this is happening either in most instances. Most of this exploitation is happening on the margins. It's opportunistic, and it's really not done by the major companies themselves. And so, you know, we've been relatively pleased that the market response is what we expected it to be. We expected prices to come down, which they did. That's what we wanted. And so we've been really tracking the impact on the market. We're not after market share at Civica. We're after impact. And we're seeing impact across the board as we intervene in certain places.
Dan, changing the world once with Civica, and I do think it is a game changer, wasn't enough for you. So you had to go out and try to do it again. And so here you have Graphite Health. Do you want to just briefly tell the listeners what you're trying to do with Graphite Health as a utility?
I'll just say, look, anybody who's interacted with the healthcare system knows it's extraordinarily complex, and that if you talk to one system, you've talked to one system. And healthcare interoperability, actually truly working together as health systems, is difficult to do. Partly because, well, really, there's a couple of reasons that go into that. One is that we all record our data differently. We all store it differently. Even things that should be simple, like blood sodium. I was talking to the former chief medical officer at HCA, and I think they have like 1,500 different ways they're recording blood sodium. And what we've never done as an industry is actually develop the lingua franca of healthcare. When we say dry kilogram weight or blood sodium, we need to record it similarly. And then from there, need to make sure that we're storing that data consistently. The idea of Graphite Health is to actually create a trusted digital ecosystem that gets us all on the same page of how data is recorded, what that data means, and then creating an ecosystem where that data can be transferred and shared in a safe way and not be exploited to the detriment of the patient. So interoperability has always kind of been this panacea out there. There's never been a business model that made it make sense. And when folks from Presbyterian in New Mexico brought this idea forward, I thought, oh, that just may do more to change healthcare than anything else. Just imagine a world where you have a patient-facing medical record that is consistent from health system to health system, that everybody can clearly understand. It is simple. That's also what our hope for Graphite will be one day.
I just one additional question here, and it's sort of a open-ended question, but in what areas of your patient population have you seen the most impact by your so-called moonshot mission? Basically, you can sort of take that question and use it however you'd like.
So Larry, look, where we've seen the biggest impact is by far with our patient care in our hospitals. We're alleviating drug shortages. You know, I just was a month ago was diagnosed with colon cancer. And the good thing is I caught it early and I was in for a surgery within a week and I got it all over my body. But I was really grateful when they administered heparin, when they administered the different medications and antibiotics, that they were there. And hospitals are dealing with hundreds of shortages of medications. But every market that Civica has intervened with so far, and we've got a list, we're working through them, we've been able to stabilize those markets and alleviate those shortages. It was hypothetical. For not hypothetical, I understood. I was really glad we were solving this for patients. But me sitting in my hospital bed, really understanding what the medication was there to do and that it was there and available, it became really real for me personally. So I would say that's the biggest impact is we've helped resolve shortages. The Civica model has held up beautifully during COVID. It's been something that we're really proud of. We've been able to resolve shortages for these essential medicines one by one. And we now have over 70 of those drugs on the market and have thousands more to go. So I think that's maybe the biggest impact. It's immediate, it's real, and it's making a difference for our patients every day.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it's a great idea. Just a great idea. David?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dan. We really appreciate the time. And as I thought, you were the perfect guest for us to have because you're challenging everybody to think about the world differently and ultimately making a big difference. And that's what all of us are trying to do in healthcare. So thanks for joining us today.
Well, what a pleasure. Nice to meet you, Larry. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Good to be with you. Thank you very much.
Alvarez and Marcel. Leadership. Action. Results.
I've always been very impressed with what Intermountain has done. I thought Mark Harrison had done an incredible job in really building that system and recognizing where their unique opportunity was, both from the standpoint of a payer and provider and utilizing the premium dollar, really managing care. And then with Civica, I mean, I think this system has really been in the forefront of what medicine really needs to be. And it's so clear in their mission statement and vision as to what it is that they want to do. And I think Dan really crystallized it beautifully for us.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the reason we see so much innovation coming out of Intermountain is for the reasons that they've really taken the payer-provider dual track very seriously and have organized themselves differently to do population health. And of course, they've had this long commitment to outcomes and quality improvement. But a guy like Dan with his business acumen comes into this and really just turns things upside down and says, look, we don't need to think about the business models in the old traditional way. Let's think about our mission. Let's think about how to get there. Let's think about how to work with others across the country. And of course, in Civica, I started to work with him when I was secretary of the VA. We joined Civica. And so he's breaking a lot of the molds, which is exactly what we're trying to do on this podcast, which is hear from leaders that think differently. And so I really was glad he had a chance to join us today.
When you think about it, what health system would have come up with the concept of being their own drug manufacturer, and especially, you know, in injectables? I mean, it was so groundbreaking at the time and so innovative in their thinking. And the fact that all these other systems joined in was nothing short of amazing. I mean, here's systems working together to solve what essentially was a major problem. And we were, as a health system, I mean, we were basically slaves to these drug companies. And this has really sort of been a groundbreaking adventure, I think, that's been incredibly successful.